Welcome to Laugh It Up Fuzzball. I am Joe the Wookiee Riot. Welcome to the podcast where we talk about life, the universe, and everything, but mostly geek stuff. A place where we get to let our geek flag fly and talk about all things geek. As I've said before, this isn't an amalgamation of geek news or a comprehensive guide to all genres or the world of geekdom. Hopefully it's just a fun place to cover some geek news, comics, The Simpsons, Star Wars, and whatever randomness finds its way onto the recording. But let us get started.
Well, hey, friends, welcome to level 390-something of the podcast, because I'm not quite sure if I'm going to find time to do a solo news episode or if we're just going to have three guest episodes in a row. You actually know the answer to that probably like within a day of me knowing the answer to that. So, hey, welcome to Laugh It Up Fuzzball. I buried the lead there, I guess, with the guest episodes. But yeah, I'm joined today by not one, but two friends. For, I don't know if long promised is the right way to say it, but at least promised for a little while episode. And today, first and foremost, the other amazing host of Laugh It Up Fuzzball. The host of Diving Into the Deep Blue. The man, the myth, the legend, the Earl of Blueberry, Benjamin Blueford Blue the Fourth, known by some of his contemporaries as Ir Retifet Remy Meckel.
Yep.
Blue.
Yeah. Hi. That's me. I don't know how great I am at this. However, I am here and I am ready to give it my alls.
You are great. If I'm going to quote the Marshall, you're cool, my dude. You make a good host. So, you know, cool. That's straight from the group chat.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is. So, I appreciate it, Marshall.
I've been calling you and Marshall co-hosts for a while now. I finally just owned up to it. But about time I finally made you earn your title.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, I love the idea of diving into the deep blue as like a thing.
Yeah, like, I do
that's,
too.
That's literally why I changed it to like the Dash Lore edition, just implying there's going to be another one. So that means within like 80 to 100 episodes, we'll do another one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe then I'll be ready.
And although this is not Diving Into the Deep Blue, you are here. And we're also joined by none other than super fan of the podcast, artist extraordinaire, designer of t-shirt, he of the punnery on the West Dock of an adventure company, Roman.
I have been summoned.
You have.
Wonderful. Yeah.
But did you bring your cabbages?
No, my cabbages!
But if that's not clue enough for you, friends, we're finally talking the live-action Avatar The Last Airbender show that came out on the flicks of net.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
and we wanted Roman to be here, but alas, he's been sick for a while, and he's finally better enough to talk with us. All that being said, I'm coming off a cold. Roman's coming off a cold. Blue's tired. So, you know, if there's any audio sniffery, whatever. Sorry about that, friends. But that's what you get when you listen to a free podcast, I suppose.
Yeah, full disclosure, I might go into, like, Batman voice mode. So enjoy that if it happens.
Oh, that's great. I am the knight.
I am the knight.
We're talking about Avatar.
My cabbages. Why did you say that name? Cabbages. Why did you say that name?
Katara.
Yeah, so I had to have the Animaniac on to talk a show based off of not an anime, because we discussed that in our anime episode, but an anime inspired much beloved amazing animated show from the Nickelodeons, and that was turned into a live action. So I guess that's a good way. Initial thoughts, either of you want to start?
Roman?
I enjoyed it. I know there's been a lot of talk about it. It's really hard to go to find a lot of people with completely positive feedback on the show. It's not perfect, in my opinion. Of course, it's never going to be as perfect as the original series, but I still enjoyed it. I still had fun. Still has its flaws, though, which I'll be happy to talk about.
That's part of the purpose of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But overall, you enjoyed it?
Yes. Oh, gosh. I don't know. There's a lot I could say. A lot of it is me comparing it to the M. Night Shyamalan movie. and how very disappointed I was at that. And I don't know, it just feels like this version, the Netflix version, just made up for a lot of what the movie was lacking, in my opinion.
Indeed, it truly did. Blue, your initial thought?
I don't care what any of those snarky internet haters say. I enjoyed the heck out of it. I thought that it was pretty dang good. Like Roman said, yes, it has, you know, a few problems that I do take issue with. However, in comparing to the movie, eons better. I like the actors and actresses better. I like there's a lot more that I like in this than I did with the movie. And there are a lot of things that I think this show has going for it in a really good way.
Hello?
Oh. Yes, I'm here.
All of a sudden, your roommate was like, shut up, oh God, and then you got quiet.
Yeah, that happened, but I was not.
Okay. I was like, oh no, she killed him. Live on the podcast, Roman, call 911. Someone call IXII. I mean, I guess it takes you to me initial thoughts. Like, we have it on record on one of the recordings with Roman, because I think this is your third time joining us, third or fourth time. When I was teasing on the doc about watching the movie first, and Roman was like, no, don't do it. And for the record, it was not done. I watched the entirety of the animated. I slept on it for a very long time and loved the ever-loving piss out of it. But then I did watch the M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie, and it wasn't good. Like, there's not much more to say. And I honestly don't find a lot of value in comparing it in any way, shape, or form, because it's so atrocious. But for people that hate, I guess, on the TV show, if you compare it, it could make it better for you. That said, I mean, I don't really have anything negative to say, like, initially about the show. I really, really enjoyed it. And The one thing I'll say, so my beloved wife watched the show with me. We went through the entire thing together. She had never seen the animated, hide nor hair, and didn't even take an episode. She was interested and compelled and moved by the story and enjoyed it and was like, is there more? And I'm like, yeah, there'll be at least two more seasons. And she was like, excellent. Then I was like, you know, it's a whole cartoon. She was like, are you going to make me watch the cartoon? And I was like, not if you don't want to. But, you know, I was like, everybody thinks the cartoon's even better. And she's like, oh, that must be pretty good. So, you know, I'm not going to say that my wife is the ultimate connoisseur, but if you're going to tell me she's wrong, fuck you, sir. That's my wife. You don't talk about it that way.
That's so, fair.
Or ma'am, if it's a lady. F you, ma'am. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, to me, having seen the show, I mean, I'm not the person where I like debate what kind of bender I am, but I really dig the show, and I've seen it one time, like, in fairness. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
It's awesome.
I think you would be I see you as an earthbender, huh? Joey. I see you as an earthbender, really.
That's wonderful. Was asked in a meeting of trainers, and I think we went with water.
Really? Yeah, okay. That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't think I'm like stubborn enough to be an earthbender, but
that's fair.
I mean, I am a giant man, so that's probably why you think like a powerful earthbender, but I don't know. I'm still like wishy-washy. I feel like I want to be an airbender, but nobody can be an airbender. So, yeah. Just all, I guess that's just clear. I don't want to bend fire.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I mean, what about you guys? What kind of bender do you see yourself as?
I always see myself as a water, because I am pretty go with the flow, very much nurturing kind of dude, and I have been compared as such. So I'm like, oh, thank you, I really appreciate that. So yeah, that's kind of where I put myself, at least. And I know a couple other people who have also put me in that position. So
see, I would have had you as an earthbender.
You think I'm stubborn enough to be?
Dude, I just think you're the strongest damn person I know. So, like, moving mountains is, like, right your speed. I get that water is super strong, too. I get that. But, like, I don't know. I'm just, like, when you put your foot down and you're, like, no, I will defend this idea, this thought, this person, it's not water. Like, it's not tsunamis. It's freaking tidal rock.
That's fair. That's fair. So, I go with that, too.
Yeah. That's all. I also agree that your personality is very, very waterbender, but I think your force is the power of stone.
That's awesome.
But water is harder than stone, if we're being fair scientifically. So
yeah.
Mountains don't change water. Water changes mountains.
That's true. That's very true.
What about you, Mr. Roman?
Funny enough, I also feel like I would be a waterbender.
Okay.
Just because I think water bending is always, it's the more adaptable of the four elements. I'm also always connected to like the Tai Chi, which is the martial art that water bending is based off of. But then I've been told I have the temper of a firebender sometimes. Especially at work.
That's fair. I've seen a little fire come out of him.
Oh, I mean, shit. My fire is renowned. yeah. All right. That's interesting. But I guess from there, just Roman as the uber anime mensch, and Blue as his close compadre. What do you wanna do? Like, I don't really like good, bad, ugly. I don't think that's appropriate. We don't need to defend the show. The show's good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you haven't seen it, before we go any further, spoilers. I will say, if you've seen the animated, don't worry about the spoilers because you've seen the animated. But
that's also very true in this. So, I have to say, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, here's a thought. So there is some stuff that is very the same, and there are a few things that are different. What did we think about the differences?
Ooh, okay. I guess that brings me to one of the only actually is quite a big gripe for me, because I understand why they made the choice that they did, but that doesn't mean I have to like it. The entire section with Bumi really kind of threw me off. Bumi's demeanor, I understand that you got to be concise. You know, you only have a number of episodes to kind of like get all of these things in the animation, story wise, into these beats, right? And I get that having Bumi being one of those people in Aang's life, in retrospect, for the speed at which they're telling this new story, was going to be problematic. I can see why they didn't want to have to give a lot of, like, you know, back and forth, a lot of like more of the, what is it called? Like reminiscing and memories and stuff like that. You get the flashbacks and all that. But like Bumi as a character is a very important character for Aang in the story. You know, in the original animation, I mean, Aang felt like he had nothing left, and he was trying to like tell them about all the great things that he had and all these amazing people that he knew. And Bumi was one of those things where he was like, oh my gosh, like there is still something of my old homeland, like that I remember it, and it's still around. It was like one of those things that really gave Aang hope. And I remember seeing in the animation when he gave Bumi that hug, I was like, oh, man. And he was like, ah, oh, Aang, you haven't changed a bit. And I was like, fuck, that's really heartfelt, because it's been a really long time since they've seen each other. Like, holy crap. You know, like 100 years, that dude is still kicking. That's crazy. And I feel like they really lost a lot of the heart of that interaction with what they did with Bumi in the live act.
Okay.
What about you, Roman?
Yeah, I agree with you, Blue. That's one of the things that kind of threw me out of, or like one of the things I disliked about the changes they did to the story, because I don't know, it was always for me, yeah, Bumi was, like you said, like Bumi was always like an anchor for Aang. and the fact that like he went through the Hundred Year War, and it made him a wiser, stronger ruler in the animated series. That was always a good thing to me. And like in the live action, they make him out to be like this vengeful friend that like, oh, you cut, like it's pretty much like, oh, you bailed on me, dude. Where have you been for 100 years? You bailed on me.
Yeah.
Now I'm this crockety old man that doesn't like you anymore. I'm like, no, you're supposed to be the wise sage that gives Aang his mission.
Mm-hmm.
So So I would agree with you. That's one of those. Also, like his makeup is kind of weird.
yeah, they did do his makeup a little weird. But that's a really great point, bringing up the fact that he was a little vengeful, and they really played it up a little bit inside of the in the live action, whereas in the animation he was like, yo, I am, like you said, I'm wiser. I went through it all. Like, Aang, I always believed in you, and I knew you'd come back. Like, because no other, I mean, he knows that no other avatar had been around. That means that Aang's still alive somewhere, because he knows how, you know, the whole thing works. So he always kept that hope. And it really feels like this Bumi in the live action just kind of gave up on everything. And that sucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when Bumi shows up, it was sort of fun because my wife has no clue about, like, who Bumi is or any of that stuff. So I'm like, okay. And, like, thinking back on the animated, I'm like, how does this character work in live action? I'm like, we'll see.
Yeah.
And I think that might have been part of the problem. I think that might have been some of the change, because I don't think his characterization in the animated worked in live action. So like that probably led the writer's room to like try and address some different stuff. I don't know.
Like, do you mean like his personality or how his powers work? Like, what do you mean that he doesn't work?
He's just so animated.
He's very, like, animated, yes.
Like, you know, he's so incredibly animated. So I wonder if that's just, you know, in the effort to tone down King Bumi, is that what led to like the changes in his character, you know?
Yeah.
Also, like, if 100-year-old character is really hard, like, how do you make somebody look 100, but also like they can still kick your ass with rocks? You know, and like really easy to do in animated. As we see, a little more challenging in live action.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I feel like they could have gotten an actor like in his 60s that made still a good athlete, but then it still aged him up a bit more. It was just like, very distracting to me.
Just straight up get Jackie Chan.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been great. Oh my God.
I would have cried. Oh, that would have been great.
That would have been great. Yeah, that would have been good casting.
Yeah. I think they were focusing very hard on different nations being different ethnicities. And I think because they stuck to the, you know, the Southern Asia like ethnicity for like a lot of the earthbending, that led to the casting too.
Which is it okay if I jump? Like, that's something I love about this new series, is just the diversity of casting.
Yes.
Same. Like, as an Asian American, like when the cartoon came out, like I was so like I was so on board. Like, oh my gosh, it's Asian Lord of the Rings. It's something that we could, like, Asian Americans can identify with in the fantasy realm, which is something we really got. And then when they announced this new live action series, I'm like, no, the cast is all good. They're all going to be people of color. Like, I was so on board with that.
Yeah,
and like just to see more Asian actors or Southern Asian actors, like, getting to be in these action roles as serious characters is great for me.
Yeah, I celebrate like that it's not a whole bunch of white people. Shamalama ding dong, take notes.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they did a really good job with inclusion. With my gosh, it was. I think that's one of the most endearing parts of why I like the Avatar animation, is because it felt more like folks like, oh, I can identify more. You know what I mean? And that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So were there any other changes that you guys wanted to talk about?
I think the most impactful change that they did, that's a big positive, was Zuko and Iroh's relationship.
Yeah.
Like that. to me, that, like, that was the best part of the whole season, was just to see, like, I always loved their connection in the original series, but then, like, they, that's the one thing that I love, that they built on that in this version.
Yeah, I love, it's so freaking, and Paul Sung Lee, like, oh, man.
Oh, God, they're so good as Iroh, like, that. Iroh is probably my favorite character out of any of them, and I'm like, I love his Iroh.
Yeah, yeah.
He's exactly what Iroh has to be.
I heard somebody like, oh, he sounds different. Like, shut up.
No, he's a fun uncle, man. He's a fun Asian uncle. I love it.
Oh, my goodness. I'm like, if you want someone sounds the same, be, like, really happy that, what is it, Paul Lee is the cabbage guy in both.
Yeah.
So make sure I get his name right. James Tsai, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, so one of the big changes that I enjoyed that other people didn't was the changes to Sokka's character. So I like Sokka better in the live action than I do in the animated, because I didn't really like him in the animated. Yeah, like all of his misogyny and, like, I don't know. Like, they watered it down enough that I was like, okay, I can like Sokka in the live action. So, but that was just me. I know other people hated it. I do think there's a bit of a missed mark in the entire, like, misogyny angle of the world. Like, you shouldn't take you getting to the northern water nation to discover, like, you know, the entire, like, difference between men and women, you know? Like, I think that was set up with a lot of Sokka stuff in the animated. But I don't, it's a different world, you know what I mean? And with the live action, like, how do you get to that? How do you handle it? What gloves do you wear when you're doing it? So, I don't know. But, yeah, I'm like, Ahsoka's fine. I'm here for Aang and Katara.
I feel like they did a pretty good job with him learning his lessons and stuff and kind of growing as a character when he got through to, basically up to Suki. I mean, she was like that big turning point for him when she kicked the crap out of him and then taught him how to fight, you know, like,
right.
Which was, I feel, an important turning point and character growth for Sokka himself. And then for Suki to kind of like, what is this dude? Like, what the hell? And, you know, kind of showcasing what kind of amazing character that she was going to be. I am a big fan of Suki. I think she's probably one of my favorite characters in the show, both live action and animated.
Correct me. Don't the Kyoshi Warriors, like, show up in the second season of the animated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was I was like, oh, they're right here in episode two. I'm like, okay.
Oh no. I think they're first introduced in season one, and then Suki comes back in book two when they go to Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so
they show up periodically throughout the animated show, and pretty early, actually.
Like Danny Pudi's character, who I don't have right in front of me, but he's definitely not in season one of the animated. The mechanist.
Yeah, I believe that's Northern Air Temple. I think that's season one.
Yeah, I think that is. I'm pretty sure. Sai, the mechanist.
And the mechanist. Yeah.
Okay, so that was in the first book?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to say it was.
I remember that as being later, but then again, like I said, I've only seen it once.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then what's old pointless lover boy guy that Katara likes for a moment that's a terrorist?
Does he
show up in season one or is he later?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Very much so.
He's in season one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's like one of their early... we've met somebody who seems real cool, and, like, they have to kind of, especially Katara, kind of has to learn, like, hey, you can be, like, hopeful and stuff and be, you know, really cool with people, but not everybody's going to always be the good person that you think they are. And it was kind of a turning point for her. Also, Jekt is, like, very much a big turning point for a number of people in the show and learning, like, who to trust and what kind of people are actually in the world. I feel like he's very like a centering character where you kind of agree with him, but at the same time you're like, but I just wish you weren't doing it that way, buddy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, Heather was like, so what's up with that guy? He was just, like, there to, like, be handsome and cause some conflict, but ultimately be pointless. And I was like, babe, that's basically what he is in the animated. And she was like, oh, okay.
So. Real quick, guys. So I looked it up. So The Mechanist comes in at book one, episode 17, The Northern Air Temple. So he was in book one. Guess who directs that episode, though?
Oh, who?
Dave Filoni.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, yeah, a lot of people will misremember that Dave Filoni, like, gets his start off with Avatar.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
But yeah, that was, so that's one of the things that rubbed me the wrong way about the whole first season of live action is they cram in a lot of stories into one episode.
Yeah,
and I think the only episode where, like, they pull something from book two into the first season was the Cave of Two Lovers storyline.
Yeah.
That's season two, and that's book two, and they pulled it into, they kind of, they, I don't know, that's why a lot of the stories, I feel like they just jammed them in there for no reason at all, which is, it's the only thing that bugs, it's one of the few things that bug me about the series as a whole.
I mean, like, so someone was arguing, they're like, oh, if they'd only, like, stretched a taffy like the animated. So I nerded out and I was like, let me see how many minutes the live action is versus how many total minutes the animated is. And the truth is, you get 43 more minutes of content in the live action.
Then
you got animated. So, like, it's not the minute, you know, it's definitely construction, if that's your issue.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's I don't know, the ads pacing where they don't really need to. I think the show is, it's at its best when I really like the new stuff they put into the story, and I think it's best when the story takes its time and breathes. But when they're jamming like three storylines, like an A plot, B plot, and a C plot into one episode, it gets kind of muddled. That's where I feel like it's weakened.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was trying to figure out how to express the thought, but I mean, I didn't have issues with it. Like, book one of Avatar is good, but I have overheard the conversation of people being like, you need to get through book one of Avatar and then the show really goes, you know what I mean?
Oh,
because
no.
book one is Aang running from his responsibilities, you know? A lot of it is him being like, no, I'm a kid, I want to have fun, like, so I disagree. I found book one compelling, but
I agree with that.
They did.
I love book one.
But they dispensed with a lot of that, you know, Aang running away from responsibility. But also they also dispensed with a lot of his training, and that wasn't my favorite thing. You know, at some point he's got to learn something. Like, why is he not even practicing waterbending? Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and he can't just use the true state of the Avatar all the time to solve all of his problems. So,
Also,
but it also felt like we got a lot more time with previous Avatars.
Yeah. Also, yeah.
Yeah.
I did appreciate that a lot. Seeing Kyoshi go ham on people, I was like, yes, slay queen, get out there and murder people. Also, Aang murdered a lot more people than he does in the show, which I also appreciated, because I don't know how they're going to work that into the ending of the show and Aang's entire reason for doing what he does. But I don't know if he noticed, but those folks that were in those firebender ships, those guys are dead. They're dead. They're like drowned in the bottom of the water. Those guys are dead. And, so
to be fair, he was like full on kaiju mode. Then.
Yes, I agree. But, you know, if they bring up the same kind of crisis of conscience that he has later on, I'm going to be like, but I don't know.
Although it would be interesting in season two if, like, he has to, like, deal with his guilt for what he did. And that kind of, like, feeds into, no, I don't want to kill.
Okay.
So is that later on.
Yes. That would be.
That would be an interesting way to like, play that.
Yeah, I agree.
So for both of you, can you list an absolute favorite thing and an absolute least favorite thing?
Like, overall?
Or specific? I don't care.
Oh my gosh, yeah. My favorite thing is the animation, like the artwork of the live action show, is my favorite thing about the whole thing. I heard somebody, I think it was my sister-in-law, telling me that people were upset with the costuming, saying that, oh, everybody looks like they're just a bunch of cosplayers. And I'm like, yeah. And cosplayers usually look way better than the freaking live action bullcrap that they put. I am so glad that everybody looks so good. The colors were solid. They weren't muted. I loved, like, the animations that they used for the Earthbender Nations, you know, like the when they're showing the city and pulling back, for the northern tribes when they're going through, like when Aang goes all kaiju mode with the ocean spirit in him, I was like, oh my god, everything in this is gorgeous. I think all the actors and actresses look fantastic. I like the look of everybody. Even Boomy, for as crotchety and weird as they kind of made him, it still freaking fits in with everything else inside of the world. You know what I mean? I never had a feeling where I was like, oh, that doesn't work, or oh, that's, I don't know why they made a choice like that for a costume or something like that. There was never a point throughout the entire show that I felt that way. I felt like everybody's characters stood out from one another, and I felt like every single background and set piece and everything was just amazingly done. The art team, incredible job. Like, go everybody there. I'm throwing fists in the air. Heck yeah.
Okay. Is there a least favorite?
Boomy.
Okay. Yeah. Already covered. Roman, or do you want me to go?
I can go. I agree with Blue. Like, I love the design choices, especially the outfits. Like, as a cosplayer, like, one of the challenges of being a cosplayer is, like, oh, you take a 2D drawing, you have to make it three-dimensional with textures and everything. So, like, to see all the costumes have, like, still look like inspired by the animated show, but then have its own feel. Like, I cosplay the Blue Spirit. My favorite episode is Mask with the Blue Spirit. Like, see the Blue Spirit look like the freaking Blue Spirit was awesome.
Right? But, oh, man.
Oh, I love the Blue Spirit. Yeah.
Oh, God. But then, overall, like, I gotta say, like, the things that I loved about the show as a whole were the things that they add. Like, they added to the lore, especially going back to, like, again, like, Zuko and Iroh. I don't know, I always connected with Zuko as a character, like, from the beginning. So, like, I always loved seeing their relationship through the series. And I gotta say, my favorite moment in the whole show, it's a new scene, is where they show Iroh's son's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
And Zuko's talking to Iroh about this. He's giving him a story about him and about Zuko and his cousin. Mm-hmm. He's trying to comfort Iroh. And then you hear the music. Oh, God, the music.
Yep.
It's the Leaves from the Vines from the original show. And I just start bawling. I was watching this maybe at like 3 a.m. I was binging the whole thing when it dropped. I was bawling. I was like, how dare you? No, it's just too fucking beautiful. That, like, I was just, it's not an action sequence. It's not, there's no bending in it. There's no special effects. It's just a beautifully one written scene, beautifully shot and beautiful and like just great performances. And with one character not even saying anything, he's just emoting this whole moment and how much this moment means to him. And I was like, this is where this show is at its best. Like, even if the special effects aren't perfect, you know, you barely see Appa and Momo. Now it's moments like this, like, I love. I'm totally staying for
it. 100%. Did you have a least favorite, Roman?
Oh, where did I write it down? It was No Flopsy.
Okay.
Flopsy. Where's Flopsy? Like, come on. I want to see Flopsy.
Okay.
I had more, like, I didn't really like how, I love that they introduced Azula early on in the series, but then I kind of don't like where they're going with her at the moment. Like, okay. there's something very menacing about her. Like, you don't meet her until book 2 in the cartoon, but you meet her, you already or introduced her in this first season. But then you like, you kind of, they're kind of like, I don't know, there's something menacing where you don't really know what's playing on her head until like later on, and probably like not even until book three of the cartoon. Here you're already, oh, she's frustrated. Oh, she's jealous of Zuko. They're already setting up her character, or I would say character flaws, but like, I feel like they're showing too much of Azula. That when she actually enters the battlefield and she's chasing the Avatar, she won't feel as menacing as she should be, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I think that's fair. I mean, I thought it was, they're giving more to her, so I appreciate that. So I have to see how the whole show goes to have a full opinion on it, you know?
That's right. Like, I'm still optimistic.
With her companion friends that are more like mean girls than the animated?
Yeah.
I didn't even really think about that. I kind of skipped over them so hard that I don't even remember them being there.
Which is sad because they're really great characters.
Yes, they are.
Especially I don't know. I hope they kind of tweak them a bit.
Okay. So for me, my favorite, and like honestly, like how I was gonna feel about this show hinged on this. It's freaking Appa and Momo. Like, thank you, creators, makers, CGI peoples, for just, oh, they're so great. Like, thank you. Like, because it really could be garbage. M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong. Like, you know, so. Yeah, and like seeing my wife fall in love with Appa too, and I'm like, oh yes. Like, not really my Chewbacca analog, but basically my Chewbacca analog. So I like giant fuzzy hominids, and I like Appa too, and that's why Roman drew a Chew Appa for me, which brought me much joy. But yeah, I just, it's so good. And I love it. It's just like the Blue Spirit thing, like watching my wife enjoy that entire episode, Roman, was the best, because I knew that there was going to be the big reveal and I wondered if it was going to hit. And she was like, oh my God, it's Zuko. And I was like, yes, yes, it's so good. She's like, but that's so complicated. And I'm like, it is. It's so complicated. So, and afterwards she wanted to talk about it, but like, why? And it was nice. Like, here we go. Welcome to the conversation, my love. But least favorite, if I'm being honest, Ko the Face Stealer.
Everything,
what do they call that? The Shadowlands or
Spirit World.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's still time to fix it, I suppose. But like, they started going there, and it's all of a sudden, like, one of the writers was like, oh, no, this shit's too weird. Like, we just got to wrap this up. Like, no. And, like, I like the design of Ko, but it was so much better in the animated. And I was like, oh, bummer. And, like, also, it just sort of wraps up and doesn't make sense. Like, they run out of time, and then it wraps up. And I was like, okay, so are we done? Yeah. Like, this whole big part of the thing, we're done? I don't know.
It's like another example of like when they try to mash two story beats together, and it just didn't feel like it worked that well.
Yeah. So yeah. I like going to the Fire Nation and the Fire Temple and the Avatar and all that. I thought that was all great. But I don't know. It just sort of, if it wasn't followed by that badass Northern Water Nation stuff, I probably would have been like, yeah, this show's fine. You know? So, and that was one of the girls I work with who really freaking loves Avatar. Shout out Jasmine if you're listening. Probably not, but shout out to you nonetheless. That was where she had stopped. She was like, oh, I'm in the spirit world and I don't think I'm gonna keep watching. And then I like, after I finished it, I was like, no, you gotta keep watching. You gotta keep watching. And she's like, okay. And then she did. She's like, no, the end part was good, but the spirit world stuff sucks. And I was like, I agree. It's not the best. But yeah, like that's you know, absolute favorite versus least favorite.
Just sad. That's fair. They got George Takei to voice Ko.
Yeah.
And I really, I wish they gave him a bigger part.
I agree.
So, I don't know. Like, there was some really cool, like, design in there, some interesting ideas, but just, I don't know that it was executed the best.
Nah.
But I know a lot of people that are like, I don't know if I'm going to keep watching it. Like, friends, book two, book three, like, just gird your loins. Like, it's just by nature of story, it has to get better.
Yep.
So, and I think the first season is like such a solid foundation to spring into some amazingness, you know? What so like Blue, you were talking about costumes and everything. It's not a negative, but it's a very clean show. Like the costumes are always very clean. The environs are always very clean.
Yeah.
The only time I really felt dirty and aged was when they were in the freaking in the caves.
That's fair. After the Fire Nation comes through, pretty much any time, I feel like everything gets all blasted and dirty. Especially Suki's mom. That was pretty funny. Her hair was done amazingly, despite having just been like burnt and stuff.
So like, but like, also that's just that's difficult. It's like us talking about clean Mandalorian boots, you know? It's,
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I don't take it as a negative because like I'm watching high concept fantasy.
Exactly.
So you know.
Exactly. I just think so. I love the costuming. Like despite it not having, you know, like you said, dirty looks sometimes. When they're portraying something and showing you like the differences between characters, you really feel it. And I very much appreciated like how close they stuck to the source material in the look and how, it just feels good. Like Roman was saying, when you're trying to build a costume up and like come up with the right textures and stuff like that, to see them there. So even if they're not dirty, it still makes my heart like super happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one thing that when we were talking about changes, like something that was added that I freaking love is seeing the attack on the fire or on the Air Nation, like the Air Temple.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Cause like, you know, a lot of times in story, it's like show, don't tell. In the animated, we're told, you know what I mean? And then you get to go there. Basically so Aang can get Momo, but I think the live action did a better job of like when you get there you're like fudge, you know.
Yeah, so. somebody equated it to like starting Star Wars with showing Order 66.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned something, Roman, that I feel like we could give it a little more due diligence if you want. Was there anything more you wanted to say about like the diversity of casting or the way that they did the nations?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit where like every nation is, I don't want to say distinct race, like a distinct culture, or like most of the actors are from a distinct background, like the Water Tribe characters, they're all Native American or First Nation character or actors, right. The Fire Nation are Chinese, Japanese, Korean. Yeah, Fire Nation, Earth Kingdom. Yeah, they're Japanese, Chinese, Koreans. I believe most of the air nomads are Chinese and Korean also. But like, there's a diversity, but there's also a cultural distinctness to each nation that the original series had. And they can still improve it, but they're still giving respect in this new live action show that I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. I really appreciate that kind of thing when they go all out to try to actually include folks. It, you know, I mean, I've talked at length about how important inclusion is. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely read the articles where they're like, yeah, First Nations, except for that white kid, Soka. But there's an entire thing about like his family claims Cherokee ancestry. And while it's not a recognized tribe, like it is a tribe that the Cherokee Nation knows about. Like it's a Kentucky Cherokee Nation. So but like he was also cast because of like his experience in Taekwondo. And you know what I mean? Like, get over it. Like,
yeah,
it's fine. So. Yeah, but he definitely stands out. But that, I mean, there's definitely lots of people that are passing that are, you know, different cultures. So we'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I just appreciate like it opens it up for more. So I'm excited for the next two seasons just to see more actors of color like on a major Netflix show like this. Not just not just as token Asians, but like, oh, we're the predominant characters in this whole world.
I mean, we got Daniel Day-Kim as Fire Lord Ozai. That's pretty freaking cool.
That is pretty freaking cool.
So there was such great casting. Like, and I don't think there's any bad acting in the show. You know what I mean? Maybe except for Boomy.
No, the acting of Boomy was fine. I don't think
it's a good performance. It's just felt very caricature though.
Yeah. And I don't think it was so much the actor's fault, you know what I mean? As opposed to the lines given, the story kind of built up around the character for this particular thing. But I think the acting was fine, like animated there, you know, very much like the voice, you know, trying to, it seems like he's an older gentleman who watched the actual performance of the character in the cartoon and then tried to portray that as much as he could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is it June that has the cool, like, mole nose dog?
Oh, June or Sisu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great part.
Yeah. And I need the next season because I need more from her, you know?
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was like, not enough June. But also Amber Mid-Thunder showing up. I was like, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. But I don't know. It's lovely, especially like just having a show where somebody, you know, younger than us is watching and is like, hey, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's definitely something I didn't have when I was growing up is like a lot of show, like we didn't have a lot of shows with positive Asian American actors on it. I remember how big of a deal that one of the Power Rangers was Asian. That was a big deal for
yeah.
Kids my age.
Indeed. I love it. So do you guys, like, what do you guys think about the bending? It's a show about benders.
Like I said, the animation, the art team was on top of it. Big shout out for the Fire Nation being able to actually conjure and throw fire. I think all of Zuko's scenes when he's like throwing the fire from his legs in the kicks, beautiful, masterfully done. Loved it. The opening scenes of the entire show where you get the Earthbender who's, you know, way back in the past, it's like the big flashback opening, and he breaks up the ground and kind of brings it up. I was like, oh, heck yeah. I'm in it. I'm in it to win it. Like, let's go. I enjoyed the bending. I thought it was great.
I thought it could have been better. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I didn't feel like it was, like, all that great. There were moments where, like, it felt, I don't know. So one of my gripes about the movie was like, oh, they treat bending like it's just magic. Long story. So I remember it was my freshman year of college at Cal State Fullerton. We had the creators and most of the production staff of Avatar come and talk to animation students. And like they brought Sifu Kisu, who's like the martial art consultant on Avatar.
Oh my gosh, and like, that's mad.
It was a dope presentation. But like one of the things like he highlighted was, bending isn't just it's not a magic power. It's not just summoning the elements. There's a reason it's connected to martial arts and the idea of chi. It's not just waving your arms around. It's not just punching or kicking. It's the idea of harnessing the chi that's naturally inside of you, your connection to the elements that you're not just forcing it. That's why it's called bending. You're not just summoning the elements, you're bending it around you and directing it. So I don't know. In this new show, they do a lot of that better than they did in the live action. There's still moments where like I feel like, oh, they're just waving their hands and throwing fire. Or I feel like, and I think the one that irks me the most is when there's the water bending. Because a lot of it, it's waving their hands around and throwing water. I think, and it's because I used to practice Tai Chi a lot, and like I know it's a lot of it. It's not just arm movement; it's core movement, it's leg movement. So like, there's a lot of points where, especially Katara, where she just throw, like she's waving her hands and she's throwing water. And like, no, that movement could have been could have been a lot stronger. It could have been a lot more choreographed. And I understand, and I think it's a lot of it has to do with like they don't have maybe they didn't have enough time to train the the cast with like proper martial arts moves, and I don't know.
I love
that. And I'm hoping like they kind of like dig into, no, it's rooted in its martial arts. It's more like the firebending looks fantastic because it's Shaolin, basic Shaolin Kung Fu, but then I don't know, I feel like they could stand to improve on some of it.
See, I love that because that is coming from a place of like experience, not only with how the movements are supposed to go, but with the actual animators and the creators like speaking to you about like where it's coming from, where it was supposed to be. And from somebody from the outside like me, like I was amazed and going, oh, this is so much more better done. And my only other comparison is the other live action, where it was very much, I felt the M. Night Shyamalan version was very much a magic, like, wah, here it is. Wah, yeah. Here's like, you know what I mean? So that's cool. I like that. I like that a lot.
I mean, I definitely love the airbending, the earthbending in this one. It doesn't take six people to lift one small rock in this one, so that was great.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but like the description of like actually using the Tai Chi in the waterbending, I don't know if you remember seeing when Katara inherited like that book from her grands, yeah. Right?
And those are Tai Chi forms.
Yeah. And I don't know why my brain didn't like put two and two together, you know what I mean? But it's probably because I don't have that experience of like, oh, like instant recognition, you know what I mean? That's awesome. I like that.
I don't have all those complex thoughts. So I was just saying, it looks cool. Yeah. And I like that the waterbending came with fluidity of motion too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like when there's the entire like Sokka's battling the master like waterbender in the Northern Water Kingdom, I was like, fuck yeah, like it was dope to me.
Well, yeah, it's a good fight, but like Roman was bringing out, for us who are not like familiar with the moves and stuff like that, and I know for sure because I did like very basic freaking karate in college for like a long time, and Kenpo with my father's fucking people in the military, he had a friend of his like come and train me, so I'd stop getting bullied all the time. But when you're on the outside and you know what the forms are supposed to look like, it's very different than what, let's say you watched a movie and then you go, oh, they said it's this, but I'm watching them and that's not how you do that. Like, yeah. It's a different feeling. And I've never done Tai Chi before, so I know the feeling that Roman is talking about, and I get it. Like I get that.
Well, there's a specific principle that the original series had, where like these bending is rooted in this martial art. It's not just a physical; it's a spiritual thing, and they touch base on it better now, and I just really wish, I hope they just push it more going forward.
Okay.
I still loved it. I still love the water bending. Yes. And then I just wish they put more into it.
Yeah.
Yes, is what I'm saying.
Okay. I mean, I think we didn't really get to see any like good water bending until we got to the end, but
also, yeah, I feel like they didn't give the water bending a lot of like showcasing up until the end. But then again, it's like I feel like waterbending is a little bit of the hardest one to do, you know, because at least with the air, all you have to do is like shimmer a little bit, yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, there's the gust. But with water, you have to actually like visually do animations of it flowing and the whole nine, and a fire, you just make a spark here and there and you're good,
you know? Yeah, you could tell a lot of the visual effects money went to the last two episodes.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. I'm super excited for when Toph shows up and we get to see some earth bending.
Oh man.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I of all the bending, I enjoyed the way they showed the earth bending the most. But I don't know. I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other were there any big themes you guys wanted to talk about from the show?
Oh, I think Roman is good for that one.
Yeah, put me on the spot like that. Oh, it's...
I mean, I've looked up, like, lists of, like, where people have talked about, like, what Avatar's big themes are. But, like, looking at the list, I don't know that I key on any of them specifically from the live action.
I don't know. I think one of the things that I found interesting about Avatar, or especially like Last Airbender, is it's a hero's journey, but then it's different because it's after the hero's failed. It's a classic, like Joseph Campbell. There's a point where the hero has a call and the hero rejects it. And then like it skewers that line, like, oh, the hero rejected the call and then disappears and then and pretty much fails his mission and has to redeem himself when he returns. And it's always sort of the thing about Avatar is always like it was always a story of Aang, not just Aang redeeming himself, but then it's Zuko's redemption, it's Katara learning to be stronger, it's Sokka, it's all these characters. And I'm really it's always the heart of the story, and I'm glad to see that that's something that they're holding on to in this live action series.
Yeah, I agree. I think they really did hold on to that quite well. I mean, we briefly talked a little bit about like the feminism angle, so like, you know, like feministic ideals. That was in there. Maybe not. I don't know that I really like took that so much from the animated either. It's just like in the discourse and the conversations where I'm like, okay. I mean, like when you were talking about like diversity, I think there's value in the mechanist, like Sun being in the wheelchair, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like people with disabilities, like I think, and even with Zuko with like, you know, his scars, like not everybody in the show is super crazy, pretty, attractive, perfect, you know? And they're all just doing the best with what they got. Even Cabbages guy. So
this poor Cabbages.
I mean, yeah, so like literally like this one article I was seeing, they're like the 10 big themes, and this is what they listed: prejudice, corruption, trauma, extinction, indoctrination, imperialism, loss, murder, abuse, and genocide. And I was like, what a great show for children.
Yep.
I was like, I don't actually disagree that any of those things were like dealt with. Like they're all there in some way, shape, or form. And yeah, like there is a bit of imperialism and prejudice when you're dealing with like the different nations and like with what they want. So yeah, the world, everything was fine until the Fire Nation attacked.
Exactly.
I think that's why it makes Avatar like as a franchise such an important story for to be told and retold and reimagined, is because it touches on these themes that you really, like, you're not, how are you going to get that from a Nickelodeon show otherwise,
right?
Like I had to like really think back, like this came out, like the original series came out in 2005 2006, and like, and I just graduated high school. Not a lot of shows like dealt with like issues like that, especially in like post 9/11 America.
Right.
Like a lot of shows didn't want to talk about war or imperialism or stuff like that. So a show like that, like Avatar came out, a multicultural show, a cultural show talking about war and genocide and militarism.
Yeah, I think,
like, that's crazy.
Yeah, fantasy gives you that angle. Like I don't want to dive into like a Star Wars D&D discussion, but like I've had some recent conversations about like some things that were introduced to me like at a young age, just because of the fantasy I was reading, that I was right there if you wanted to pick it up. You could also gloss over it and go move right past it and enjoy the story. So, but I appreciate that. I think, you know, so the creators gave us something good, and that's actually a pretty good segue into talking about the creators leaving the show. Do we have any thoughts on this show existing beyond the creators starting it? And does it change what our final product is? Was there too much studio entanglement? Like, what do we think?
That is a really good question, because I remember when they said that the original creators had backed out, and I was like, oh no, that's never a good sign. Like, what are they doing to the show? And, you know, I think the final product is fine. Like I said, I really enjoyed it, even no matter what the naysayers are saying. But from like what the standpoint of what they did with Boomy and stuff, I can understand them being like, oh no. And now with a little more understanding of how like the movements and stuff are supposed to go, maybe they took issue with that too. Who knows? But I think we still have the show without them. However,
I think what I believe it was Roman that had said, you lose a little bit of something, obviously, from the originals, and kind of trying to put all the stories together in the fashion that they did didn't always like hit that mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Roman?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I remember when they announced that Michael and Brian were going to be part of the show, and they listed creative differences with Netflix. And I know a lot of people got nervous, and they were like, oh, it's going to be Shyamalan all over again. And I can kind of feel where Michael and Brian's influences in the show. It's interesting because they're credited with writing episode 1, Aang, and episode 6, The Masks. And if you really like watch those are the ones that are the most, they're so close to the source material, but at the same time they have their own independent voice to them. It's interesting, like those are the two episodes that the creators were credited with touching. So I don't know, you can kind of, any of the, like a lot of the changes that we kind of talked about that we didn't like, you can kind of feel like I get the sense like, oh, maybe those are things that Brian and Michael were pushing again, or they didn't agree with. Yeah. And that's why they're like, okay, if they're going to go this way, then we're out of here. So like, part of me is like really hoping, since they have announced season 2 and 3, that Netflix is willing to bring Michael and Brian back and say, okay, we're willing to listen to you more. How do we make that? Like, it's, like, people liked it, but we want people to love it. How do we do that, Michael and Brian?
Yeah. You think there's a world where they do come back?
I'm hopeful. I it's a long shot. I doubt it, but I really hope it would. They could make some. They could not maybe fully come back, but maybe just like, okay, let's rewrite some of this, or we'll help with the story. They don't have to be like fully involved, but like just to have something. It would be like, I don't know. It'd be like having Star Wars. It's like doing Star Wars without, okay, you don't do Star Wars without George Lucas, but then if you don't include Dave Filoni, it's hard.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, at least, like, if you can't have the creators fully involved, like, have them have something, have them do something in it. So at least the spirit of something that they made is still there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think I'm excited that they just get to focus on their movie, you know what I mean, with the Aang gang.
Yeah, so. Oh, that's going to be sick.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm like, oh, sure. It's don't be sad, friends. They're still invested in this world, you know. give me more from the Aang gang. Like my favorite parts of what I've seen of Korra is when it's anything having to do with the Aang gang. So yeah, I mean, I don't, what other stuff do you guys have to talk about it? I've sort of run out of my notes. Like, they got two more seasons and they got to hurry up before those kids start Stranger Thinging.
Oh yeah, that is very certain. They gotta. Well,
I read somewhere they're planning on shooting them back to back, just so that doesn't happen.
That would be smart.
That would be super smart.
Yeah, because it's whenever you're dealing with kiddos, you gotta be careful.
You gotta be quick.
Well, my I was just looking at pictures of my boys from like 2 years ago, and I'm like, holy hell, like who are those babies?
Yep.
So, or I was looking at myself from 2 years ago.
For reals, looking at my beard from 2 years ago, I'm like, oh, that is some character growth.
Yeah, my oldest definitely talked to me the other day and was like, Dad, you're so gray. I'm like, I love you too, kid.
I just got whiter.
that happens as well.
It does.
I'm not innocent of that either.
Same. Although I'm trying to rectify that.
Yeah, me too.
What other Avatar stuff you got, Roman?
That's all I got. Did they ever tell you I almost got an internship on Korra?
Oh my gosh!
No,
sweet.
I would like, yeah, like I'm still going through animations, my animation course at Fullerton, and I applied for an internship for Nickelodeon. At the time, you didn't really know what show you'd end up on until you got interviewed. So like I got all the way to the first interview process, and they're like, hey, so we like your stuff, so we're thinking of putting you on 2 of Korra. I was like, what? And I think after they told me that, I think I got way too, I know where I went, I think I went way too enthusiastic about it, and I might have creeped them out, so I didn't get it.
Aww.
That's okay. Like, a good friend of mine got it anyway, and I was like, oh, I'm happy for you.
Jealous. Oh, that's, yeah,
but jealous. I was so, so close to getting on Core.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah, no, like, Avatar has always been an important series for me. I'm like, oh, that would have been so great.
So, like, are you glad that it exists, Roman? The live action?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I'm glad it exists, and I'm, again, I've said it on multiple occasions, my bar for measuring any content is it as bad as M. Night Shyamalan's Last Airbender. Like, that's the bar. Like, if it's better than that, it's fine.
Like Hondo Onaka, you set the bar at 38 inches.
And, like, again, and this Netflix is, it's not perfect. It's not, and I don't expect it to be a completely 100% faithful adaptation of the anime and an animated series, because nothing could beat that.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is still great. And yeah. it's introducing Avatar to a whole new audience, which is even better.
Oh, and the numbers of the animated on Netflix have only skyrocketed because of the show.
Oh yeah.
So, like, yeah. Not everybody is Mrs. Wookiee and like, do I have to watch the animated? Although it's like lovely because I know that she likes it. I can't wait for when I decide that me and the boys are watching it. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. They're going to love it.
That's going to be good.
They are going to love it.
And like, she'll be into like having it on too because she likes the story, you know? So it'll be good times.
Yeah.
So yeah. It'll be good times. Like, I cannot wait. If anything, I know Shawnee will be down. I don't know about the 9-year-old. He's hit or miss.
Oh, man. I just can't wait until Zuko's like, hey, Zuko here.
We should talk about, like, what scenes are you looking forward to hoping they do in the live action?
More cabbages guy.
More cabbage guys.
Yep, more cabbages guy. For sure.
Definitely Toph.
Yep.
Toph
is gonna be, oh, I can't wait.
I hope they do the whole Blind Bandit episode, like just that episode.
Oh yeah.
Like an hour long that episode. That would be great.
I mean, just based off of how they like stuck the landing with the finale of the first season, I cannot wait to see the final confrontation between Fire Lord Ozai and Aang.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
So yeah. Like, yeah,
that's a lot of money right there.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of money. Yeah,
but I think that could be great.
I want to see the boulder. Can't wait for the boulder to make an appearance.
The boulder,
because you know the boulder's gonna show up. you know he's gonna show up, and it's gonna be so great.
Yeah, I want more of the Kyoshi warriors.
Oh, the way more. Yes,
and like I'm excited for more of the previous avatars. You know.
Yeah.
And I think the entire Zuko Iroh stuff, because it's the same and even better. Like, oh man, yes please. I think when all is said and done, when the show's done, it's just gonna be like, wow, look at that. So if anything, I think if they really do the entire like, we don't trust you, Zuko, you can't join us, you stay alone in the cave, because of the way they've done the character growth and like the live action, that might come off a little false.
Yeah.
But that's okay. So we'll see. I guess that's where Toph comes in.
True. That's true.
So what about anything else from you guys?
Oh, what else would I like to see? Lion Turtle. Can't wait to see Lion Turtle. Ooh, that's going to be interesting.
Good Lion Turtle.
Oh, I really hope they skip the episode that breaks my heart with poor Appa all alone.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I kind of want to see that.
Oh no, my heart.
I know, it's heartbreaking, but then like a whole hour of just Appa, because I get it, it's expensive to animate him all the time, but so you barely see him in the series. But like, if you just, that's all they show you for like a whole episode. Oh, that'd be so good.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, like, I mean, I'm still sad that Hawkeye didn't give me the pizza dog episode, so like, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm also looking forward to the underground library, the desert library.
They showed the owl. They showed Washington already.
Yeah.
So you know they're going to get there.
Exactly.
I mean, I am curious about how they're going to do bloodbending.
Mm. So. Oh, that's going to be sick.
So, and I think the Southern Raiders could be fun.
Or just help. Oh, just to see Bossing say, though. That's going to
be Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we've seen, I think we've seen every, most of the big locations except Bossing say.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Oh, no Appa. No Appa.
Come on, that's the best. Those, I know it's gut wrenching, but those are the best, like some of the best episodes.
Oh, I know. Just catch me taking a week off of work because I can't stop crying. Oh man.
Oh boy.
So, as beautiful as that episode was, I've seen it one time, and on the rewatch, I'm like, let's skip this one. so sad and happy, but sad. Oh, seeing like all those air bison in the live action, like in the first episode, just like filling the skies. So
yeah.
Good. Also yeah. Sad, but so good.
Very amazing.
Yeah. There was some real greatness. All right. So I guess that's a final thoughts. I'll go first because you guys are the Animaniac. I like it just as much. And I think despite like any of the maybe like minor critiques we had, like overall it's a good solid show. Like I give it like an A minus, you know what I mean? I think it's better than a, I mean there's a lot of great content. We live in a great geeky world where there's a glut of good content, but yeah, it didn't disappoint, and I'm excited for more.
So, excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I give it a I give it a solid A. Yeah, a solid A. I think they did as much as they could. I understand, you know, how these companies run, and especially Netflix is very notorious for getting away with murder and doing some really shady crap in the background. So I am very proud of everybody for getting as much in there as they were able to get. And super kudos to the art team. I'm proud of them for sticking to whatever guns that they had to stick to, and you know, for whatever little letdowns that are across the way, I get it. You know, companies be companies. So solid A for effort.
Roman?
Well, yeah, again, I enjoyed Avatar: The Last Airbender on Netflix. I never expected it to be a complete remake, and I always try to watch it as in the lens of it's not a remake, it's a reimagining. The retelling. I know Netflix has been heavy on like adapting cartoons and anime into live action. They've been hit or miss. Death Note. I think they were doing okay. In my opinion, they were doing okay with Cowboy Bebop to a certain point, and then that didn't work. And I don't know. I feel like this is they're starting to hit their stride with a good balance of, okay, let's not do a shot-for-shot remake. We'll try to keep the spirit of the thing and change a few things up and make it interesting for a new audience. And they're doing that. And yeah, the foundations are there. I'm really interested to see where they build up from here. As long as they keep the spirit of the original series at the heart of it, I'll always be down to watch.
Yeah, and did you give it a letter grade, Roman?
Oh, A minus.
Okay.
With room for improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty solid across the board. So and from three different levels of watching and knowership. That's a word, right? Knowership.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. We're gonna roll with that.
Knowledge.
Knowledgeability.
Knowledgeistic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All those words, words. But yeah. I think that's good. I feel satisfied. Are you all satisfied? Are your cabbages safe?
I have cabbages.
Yeah.
Flamio Hotman.
I mean, there's not going to be a B2 emo moment after this, Roman, where you're like, what the heck? Why didn't we talk about that? No, I think when me and Jack talked Dune, I was like, did we talk about the Mind Killer? But we did. I just forgot about it. So, but yeah, thanks, guys. Tell Roman, tell them where they can find you.
Oh, I am on. It's weird because like Twitter's a separate thing now and Blue Sky's a separate thing. I'm on most things at rom_cam_art, except Blue Sky. You can find me on rom-cam-art. I'm slowly getting back into doing art more. Hopefully, I got big things coming. I got big things planned. Hopefully, I'll be posting them up soon.
Oh, I hope so. I love seeing all your art, Roman.
And eventually I'll get to Joey, to the long to-do list Joey's giving me.
No, no, it's fine.
I have a short list that I got to get through.
The good news, Roman, is that I don't keep a list of things that I send your way.
Well, I do. And I, not just you, everybody. I mean, they're getting unruly.
I just came up with the most badass idea that I was so proud of myself today, but I abstained from sending it to anybody.
Just keep writing them down. I'll get to it.
Oh no, I had this this brain epiphany in my car driving to go pick up the Sean guy, and I was like, oh my god, it's freaking amazing. I'm excited. I'll tell you off mic. Blue, where they find you?
You can find me at Blue Wolf D on the Instagrams. You can also find me with the Capes and Caverns crew. We finally did another episode a little bit ago. We're trying to find some time to do some more for you guys. Capes and Caverns, by the way, is a wonderful superhero-inspired D&D wonderful session with my friends Cameron Jackson, Stephen Thomas, and Autumn Gaberski. It's a fantastic little troupe. You can find old episodes of season one and the first episodes of season two on Silver_Bulette on YouTube. You can catch us every other Monday-ish on Twitch at Silver_Bulette there as well. That's going to be Stephen Thomas's personal accounts on both of those. He is the one that is putting together all of our stuff and keeping it nice and fresh for us. So go catch us there. It's a really good time.
Okay. I just tried to do a Google search of Silver_Bulette and nothing came up. Just a bunch of silver bullet stuff. So I have to go straight to the YouTubes. I was actually curious to see how many episodes there were to watch.
There's a number on there, actually. He has quite a few.
Yeah. Anywho, you find me laughing at Fuzzball Podcast at gmail.com, at Wookie Riot on Twitter and Blue Sky and Threads and Instagram. Just remember, Wookie's got two E's. Laugh at a Fuzzball's Facebook group, plug. If you do the Book of Faces, just type in Laugh at a Fuzzball's, and it's a closed group, but you ask to join, and we say yes. 730 plus people talking geeky, good stuff. It's not a big imposition on your feeds, but there is fun stuff that pops up. Danny, the semi-official news mofo, the marshal himself. If nothing else, make sure that there's stuff that goes up. But Roman posts and Blue posts and other people post and I post. It's pretty great. I wish there was more commenting and discussion, but you know what? It's fine. As a news source alone, it's very valuable for the podcast. And I think that tpublic.com/user/laugh-it-up-fuzzball. If you want to get a sticker or a shirt or something and support the podcast that way, there are designs, and in the future, new designs. Maybe the blue homework was part of that. Yeah. So yeah, there's at least two that we have a plan to come up somewhere in the future.
Exactly.
Wait, did we ever try to put Chewy Yappa on there or no?
I don't think so.
Yeah, right.
I don't think we did. I think after Robo Grogu, we realized that they watch a lot closer.
All right.
So, Joe, in answer to your question, there are 44 episodes of season one of Capes and Caverns, and there are currently 10 episodes of season two.
Okay. And every episode's like 2 hours, right?
A little less. Most of them are like an hour 30.
Okay. I still want Steven to make it podcastable, and I'd be all caught up, but, you know, that's my life.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I know what I feel.
He just needs to give me access to the files, and I can convert it. It's done, but anyways.
And you can look it up on the YouTube under Capes, the letter N, Cavern.
There you go. Sweet. Another way to get to it. I think that's all the things. You can also search tpublic.com. Just type in Laugh at a Fuzzball, and the designs will show up for you. And that's all the things, I think. I'm so thankful. Roman, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Always love talking to you guys.
Yeah, we've been biting at the bit for this episode to happen, so I'm so grateful that it did.
Heck yeah.
And then, of course, the other host, the Earl of Blueberry,
You know who you is, Blue.
I know who I is.
Iri Retifet, Remel Mekki. We'll have to explain to Roman what the hell that means afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
I wanted it.
It's not bad. It's funny. It's so dumb. And then me, Tribal Chieftain, Joe the Wookiee Riot, we appreciate you. Protect your cabbages. Watch out for when the Fire Nation attack. Protect your airbender brethren. Fortify your defenses. Be the rock. Bend the water. Play with fire.
Reclaim your own honor.
do those things. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the podcast. So I guess that's us saying TTFN, us out. Us. We're so out.
Out of it.
Bye, friends.